What is up, everybody, and welcome to the tailgate. This is Tailgate Talks, powered by the Nation. Today is July 31st, episode 229, and we are discussing Texas Tech fall camp opening today, a huge signing by the softball team, some Olympics, and then House of the Dragon season 2, episode 7. All of that is going to be discussed today, so we've got a fun episode for you guys. And to catch everything we are doing here at the tailgate, make sure you are following us. Follow us on Apple, follow us on Spotify. You can follow us both there and give us a 5-star ratings, 5 stars for the tailgate. If you listen to us on Apple, you can always leave us a review there. We always appreciate those. Also, follow us on social media. We are on Twitter at tailgate_talks. We're still going to call it Twitter, even though Elon keeps asking people to not call it that. That's what it is in our hearts. Follow us on Twitter. We have Facebook, Instagram, and a YouTube channel. So follow us there if you feel inclined to do so. Lastly, if you have anything for the show, anything you would like us to discuss, comments, questions, all of that, you can always shoot us an email at tailgatetalkspod@gmail.com. So with all of that said, let's go ahead and get into this week's episode.
Get your guns up, Red Raider Nation. Let's go!
All right, Dustin, well, we are in the last week of July. Things are starting on the football end as today is the first day of fall camp. The season is a month away, and so we are getting closer and closer as August hits. We'll start doing some deep dives into the football team offense, defense, look at the schedule like we normally do, but this week, we're just going to touch on how it feels for football to be a month away with fall camp getting started. How you feeling?
Good. I mean, nothing really matters yet, but it's good to have the boys back out there getting ready. They got about a month, like you said, till we're live and going at the Jones. I mean, you can still see the construction going on in the background of practice videos as I'm watching right now. So it's kind of cool. If you've been by, it's massive. So excited for them to be able to get that done by next year, but the south end zone will be done. But yeah, excited for the boys. I mean, I think the only people I'm really excited about is Barron throwing good. How's the shoulder? Yeah. I know he's come out and coaches are like, yeah, it's fine. It's good. Back to normal. But till we can see with our own eyes on the field, we'll take that. The words are just whatever. And then obviously what Micah Hudson's doing, he's at practice, he's fully suited up, full go. So that's exciting from our stud wide receiver freshman.
Yeah, it was good to see him out there in practice gear and hearing that he's 100% and going. I think somebody posted a video of him catching a pass on the sideline. And so, yeah, it's just nice to have football back in the air. College Football 25 has definitely got me like antsy for
football
to get back. And so I'm excited. I'm glad the players are back. Yeah, like you, I'm real curious about Barron. And like I said, I'm going to take everything with a grain of salt and wait till the season actually gets going and see how he looks and see how long we can keep him healthy. But excited for that. I saw, Bryce Ramirez is going to wear the number 3 jersey again, which represents the brand. But an addition on the offensive side that I really liked, Josh Kelly is getting the number 3.
Yeah, new guy. That kind of surprised me.
That surprised me, but that's really awesome to hear as like a new guy, a kind of star receiver that's coming in and just really accepting the brand and kind of just taking on that role and already getting the number 3. We're all high on Josh Kelly. And so for him to come in and kind of do that and take that jersey, that's pretty big honor for him. And so I expect big things from him this season. And that's a pretty cool gift there. I've heard that the Cameron Brown, the backup quarterback, can outrun Tua. I've heard that. And he's like 230 pounds or something like that. So that's interesting. And
yeah, I saw that.
He's going to run some sets. I know.
Yeah.
We love having, we're going to play all our quarterbacks.
And see my face now, like, oh, God. Kitley's so excited that he has a Cam Newton quarterback again, and he's just going to run quarterback power and zone read up people's ass on the goal line.
You know, if I'm okay with it, like some of the stuff we did with Donovan Smith worked really well.
Situational is fine.
You can use a weapon situationally. If he's like that good of a like athletic specimen, you have to get him on the field every now and then. I like that. I like running quarterback power with him and not Barron.
Yes.
I'll tell you that much. And so if you're going to do that kind of stuff, I would much rather it be with Cameron Brown than with Barron Morton at the quarterback and risk him getting hurt. So that's, you know, encouraging stuff to see. I just, like you, I hope we don't overdo it on there.
Overdoing it, nice
situationally.
It's like third and six at the 40-yard line. Why are we doing this now?
Yeah. And so we'll be interesting, but yeah, we'll kind of, you know, next week we'll be diving more into Texas Tech football and everything like that. And so hopefully we have some more stuff from camp getting started to kind of discuss some players that are stepping up and some other things like that. But I just kind of wanted to dip our toes in the water with football camp opening up today. It is getting closer and closer. Another bit of Texas Tech news, news that kind of took over social media last week. Of course, it happened right after we recorded. As news breaks, it's always after we record here on Tailgate Talks. But softball, Texas Tech softball making kind of trending on social media. Not the sport that you expect from Tech, but Najeri Kennedy, National Softball Player of the Year last year, committed to the Texas Tech Red Raiders with a reported record-breaking NIL deal of $1.2 million for softball. Now, that's probably not the biggest NIL deal that's been handed out, but in softball, this was quite the news breaker, quite the deal. But the softball team is getting the best player in softball. When we've already got a pretty damn good coach hiring, we've got a really good recruiting class. You've been able to keep some of your players from last year. You brought in a lot of transfers, from a really good program in Louisiana that our head coach was at. Dustin, what do you think this, signing means and just what do you think about it in general?
Yeah, this one's shocking. I think it's a good word for it because we didn't hear rumblings of it. I didn't even know like player year was in the portal, which I mean, at this level, you should always be in the portal, go get the money. Yeah. But yeah, for Tech softball, like that's amazing. That's crazy. They're already kind of going up, hired a better coach, kept the number two recruiting class, like you said, kept all but one player from last year. That was a young, good team. And now to add the best pitcher in the country and player of the year, like that's wild. Like what a move. That is, it'd be like if Zion went to another team after Duke. What?
Zion, oh, he's going comes to Tech
and like a mid-level-ish type team. Like we don't have a history of good softball. Like
is our not going coach to coach in like 3 or 4 years.
So it's like we don't have the program for it either. Really, it'd be like if Zion came to Tech to play basketball the next year. But
yeah, it's
amazing for the team by far. Puts you on the map a little bit, but like good move on her part, honestly. Like there's not money in professional softball.
Mm-mm.
Like you can go make the Olympics and maybe get some endorsements, but that's about it. Like go get $1 million+ now.
Yeah.
And like softball, especially being a pitcher, is not really, you're not looked at as part of the team. Your individual stats are just what they are.
Yeah.
Sure, if the team wins, that's even better. But, like, if you're just striking everybody out and have, like, a 40-3 record or whatever she has, like, no one really cares where you're at. Like, your legacy is all those strikeouts and wins. Like, that's awesome. So, like, good for her going and just getting $1 million+ for that.
But softball pitching is completely different, too. Like, she's playing all of the time. It's not like college baseball pitching where you have one – you're pitching
you can play every other game.
Yeah, she's – throwing several games that, you know, she's going to be pitching all the time for us.
And that position, especially that high level of a position, makes such a huge difference on the team.
Yeah.
Like more than just getting a pitcher in college or a player. I mean, even a basketball, football player, like doesn't make that much individual impact as a softball pitcher does.
Yeah. So that's like takes you from a team where you're like, okay, you know, after we got our new coach in and a lot of those transfers, you're like, okay, this is a pretty decent team. But now you have a superstar like that on your team and you're thinking, okay, maybe we can do some damage this year. Cause if you have her on the mound, like that's going to give you a chance to win just about every single game that she's on the mound for, which is going to be a lot of games. And so that's, it's pretty cool to kind of make waves in another sport like softball and get a player of this caliber. Apparently, you know, Adidas was a big part in this. Apparently Patrick Mahomes was, there to kind of help get this, through the finish line. And so, pretty cool to see Texas Tech softball trying to make a run, trying to be relevant in a sport that's really growing over the last several years. Like the popularity of this has really shot up through the roof. And so it'd be fun to have a competitive softball team here at Texas Tech and a player of that caliber that'll get fans in the seats and out there supporting the Lady Raiders as they begin year one of the Jerry Glasgow era. And so it's a pretty cool deal. What do you think this means, like on the terms of like Tech shilling out $1.2 million for a softball player? What do you think this means for other sports? Like, you know, a lot of people I've seen out there being like, Aaliyah Chavez is out there. What does this do? Does she now know, hey, Tech can get me the NILs that I need if I want to go to Tech?
Yeah, it's got to be a very, very, very high level player, like a player of the year.
Yes.
Or a Aaliyah Chavez with number one recruit, huge potential, like in hometown. So you got to get in already there. But like, if you're really good, but not like amazing, you're probably not getting that all the time. But yeah, if it's a very high level player, yeah, I mean, why not? I mean, especially when you have the people that are backing it, which is what you can see in our hearing.
Yeah, I think it confirms that Tech isn't broke, as Baylor fans might think, because we're not going to shuck money out for a 3-star linebacker. It's funny that they're saying that when we just spent $1.2 million on the best player in softball. I just think it makes us stand up with all these other programs. Like and especially in these sports, like you're saying, you're not going to see us shucking out a whole bunch of money on players. That's really not going to make a difference. But in these sports like softball, where you can get a player that can completely change your entire season, a player like Aaliyah Chavez, who could do like a Caitlin Clark type thing for Texas Tech if you get her, like, yeah, we're going to be competitive on that. And it just kind of goes to show that we're a program that's going to be here for the NIL era. And we're going to step up to the plate when need be to get certain players.
And players notice that stuff. Yeah. Like, even other sports players notice that stuff.
Yeah. And when you're throwing that money down for softball, like, all right, you got money elsewhere in all these other programs too. And so we'll be curious to see if that has any, you know, pull in the Aaliyah Chavez recruitment. We did make her top 5 or top 6 or whatever number school she's down to.
6, yeah.
But that's kind of like the big one that I'm watching now, because, you know, it'd be really exciting to get Aaliyah Chavez. That would do incredible things.
And what, she probably commits by the end of the year?
You would think, because she's senior year now.
Or even maybe before senior year starts. I don't know. I don't know when. Yeah, I don't really know when basketball commits anymore, because we've been kind of out of it with transfer portals.
But it definitely gives us a shot in that thing. Especially if she wants to stay home and make some money while playing hoops. So that's kind of the big Texas Tech news for us this week. I'm going to kind of shift over to final shots before we go over to House of the Dragon. Really, my final shot for us this week, Dustin, is just the Olympics has started.
Sure.
You and me always love the Olympics, watching the random ass sports that the Olympics provides on, you know, these weekdays. I was watching water polo earlier. Sand volleyball is always one of my favorites to watch. You know, ping pong, was watching this dude with this crazy serve and ping pong earlier.
Sick.
What are you enjoying most from the Olympics so far this year?
Not going to lie, I haven't watched much.
Oh, man.
That's because of College Football 25.
It has consumed our lives, yes.
I watch maybe a little bit during lunch or dinner, but then, like, when I'm back to the living room, I grab the sticks and start playing my Dynasty mode. So, like, I took a nap during some swimming yesterday.
Yeah.
Apparently some Ireland guy won, like, the 800 or something. Like,
oh, damn.
That was a big deal. There's some French swimming that's really good. Saw the women's gymnastics crushed it.
Yeah.
The men's gymnastics got a medal because of Steven, the pommel horse guy.
Superman. Clark Kent of gymnastics over there. Yeah, that was a really cool moment.
The basketball's first, doing good.
Yeah, basketball just tipped off with South Sudan. Yeah, that was a really cool moment on the pommel horse. Needed to have like a basically perfect routine, and he did it.
He crushed.
Got the U.S. Their first medal in 16 years, and so pretty impressive. Yeah, you were showing me the rugby play yesterday. That
rugby. Woo, women's.
Won us a medal at the like a buzzer beater rugby score, basically.
Mm-hmm. Down the house.
Pretty cool. Yeah, women's gymnastics dominating, getting another gold, as you know, you kind of be expected. But yeah, you know, like you, I haven't been as locked in as I usually am on this because of CFB 25. I've been, you know, trying to power through my Tech Dynasty here, about to finish year two of that. But you know, everything that I've turned on and watched, it's always a good time. The sand volleyball court being like right by the Eiffel Tower is pretty dope. I didn't like the opening ceremonies. I thought the boats were cool, but you and me are partial to the introducing the people as they walk in and showing the flag bearers and what sports they do, and then being able to drink if you get it wrong or right or whatever.
Yeah, it took away out from a little bit of the procession. But I guess it is cooler for like more people and that are at the Olympics, fans get to watch that ceremony rather than just the people in the track stadium.
I thought it was still cool like to do that. And
it was raining too, so that looked like it sucked.
And the U.S. boat was a pretty cool,
massive,
cool picture.
Okay, so question. Some of these smaller countries.
Yeah.
Some of them had their own individual little dinghy.
Yeah.
And some of them got, you know, multiple countries on a medium-sized boat. If you were a small country, would you rather have the individual boat or paired up multiples?
I'd rather be paired up and be on like the bigger boat. The small boats kind of looked like that. Look, especially with the rain, I was like,
"That's so bitch."
At least the other ones had like an indoor spot where you could just, if you wanted to get out of the rain for a little bit, you could.
It just made you look like even smaller.
Yeah.
You have five athletes on this little boat.
Little dinghy just going through, like, and you're just
put me on
stuck
the front
in the rain.
Of this other boat, please.
Maybe they can go a little faster, though, and so they can get through it a little bit better. But, yeah, I would definitely want to be on the bigger boat with another country, unless we're, like, super hate that country.
So,
but that's all the Olympics. You have a final shot for us.
Josh Young is back for the Rangers. He's finally over his thumb injuries. Had a little minor league tune-up game the other day, and then Tuesday was back in the lineup. So Josh Young's back. Trade deadline's over, so Rangers been making a push, so maybe they can make the push kind of like they did last year and get hot come playoffs.
Yeah, glad to have Josh Young back playing baseball in our lives. The Rangers are just clearly so much better when he's in the lineup, and so happy to have him back. I think one of the shocking things for me this baseball season is that as you say, trade deadline's passed. It's playoff push time, and the Red Sox are somehow in the mix in the playoffs.
Where'd they come from?
I don't know. Right now, we are right behind the Royals, two games back of the Royals for the final wild card spot. And so the Red Sox have actually been a surprisingly decent baseball team this year. And so, you know, we'll have some vested interest in them if they can kind of keep this going and keep in the race. And so, it's kind of fun. I was expecting them to be one of the worst teams of baseball, but yet somehow we're competitive. And so, all right, well, that will do it for our, sports discussion this week, a quick little catch up on some of the things over the last week, but now it's time to shift over to House of the Dragon and discuss season 2, episode 7. The Red Sewing.
I see no reason to cast aside loyalty. No matter how loathsome I may find her representative, the Prince.
King, mind your tongue, boy.
Well, Dustin, the penultimate episode of season 2, episode 7, titled The Red Sewing, aired on Sunday night. And so let's quickly recap what happened in episode 7, get to what we thought of the episode, some winners, some losers, and who won the episode. So, the Red Sewing, we're just going to start off on Team Green here because there's not a whole lot of action. Nope. This is a very heavy Team Black episode. So just going to quickly some notes on Team Green. Not a lot's happening at King's Landing. Aegon is in rehab. He's doing some physical therapy with the Grand Maester, trying to learn to walk again at the instruction of Laris, who's trying to get the king back because he knows his power resides with Aegon. So he's trying to help Aegon get better in this process. Jasper Wilde, a character we haven't mentioned yet, but he's one of the members of the Green Council. Him and Laris have an interesting conversation. Jasper has discovered news that Sea Smoke has been seen with a rider and tells Laris of this news. They both agree that this news might be best left for the wind, but that might come back to bite them in the ass a little bit later in this episode. And Queen Alicent is taking a much needed vacation after being pretty much kicked off and shed of all of her duties. She's like, now's the time to go. Get a little R&R. So she takes off to the woods, goes for a nice swim in the lake, tries to enjoy some time away from King's Landing. Meanwhile, a very packed episode on the Team Black side. Daemon gathers with the Riverlords in Harrenhal and is able to bring them to his side thanks to the young and pretty awesome Oscar Tully, who has become the paramount of the Riverlands. Pretty impressive episode for Mr. Tully. Did you have something you wanted to say there? You look like you were...
No. Keep going. You're good.
And so Oscar Tully gives a good speech. He slam dunks all over Daemon several times with some bars, but ultimately brings the Riverlords into the fold for Daemon and Team Black. Over on Dragonstone, Rhaenyra meets Adam of Hull, who Sea Smoke claimed in the last episode as its writer. He is pretty quick to bend the knee for the one true king queen, Rhaenyra, and agrees to follow her to Dragonstone, where he gets a well done from his father, Corlys, and gets quite a good upgrade in his wardrobe as well. So things going well for Adam right now. Missaria, learning of this, tells Rhaenyra, about a plan where, all right, if this works, there's several Targaryen seeds running around King's Landing. And Rhaenyra agrees that this might become the War of the Bastards. A bastard himself, Jace, disapproves of this plan as he thinks it'll hurt his claim to the throne. If you give these mongrels, as he calls them, a dragon, will they think that they should be king? And it also kind of hurts his, it hurts his claim because he is a bastard. He is not of true Targaryen blood, as Lord Strong was his father. And so he thinks, what will this do to me? Will the people start to question me? The one thing that makes him a Targaryen is that he's able to ride a dragon. Now, if you're letting just random people ride a dragon, how will that hurt his claim? I thought it was very, very on point stuff from him, despite this being kind of his plan of getting people to ride the dragons. But nonetheless, Rhaenyra decides to follow through with this plan and brings the Targaryen seeds out to Dragonstone. When the seeds get there, Rhaenyra greets them and brings them out to meet Vermithor. Vermithor is the second largest dragon in the realm, right behind Vhagar. And well, this becomes Jurassic Park, but with dragons. Yes, Vermithor is acting like Rhaenyra just brought him an all-you-can-eat buffet. He loses it and kills all the dragon seeds as Rhaenyra watches from the press box. But then Hugh, one of the small characters that we've been following this season, matches Vermithor's intensity, and Vermithor likes it and decides to claim him as his new rider. Then Ulf, who's another small character that we've been following kind of along through the season, he managed to escape the wrath of Vermithor, stumbling through the dragon pit, only to find himself in another dragon's lair. We meet Silverwing for the first time. He awaits his doom, but instead is chosen by Silverwing as her new rider. He then takes his new whip out for a quick little joyride over King's Landing. This kind of brings some panic to King's Landing. Aemond hears that there's a dragon, rides off on his horse to grab Vhagar and chase after Silverwing. And as he comes up on Dragonstone, he realizes the numbers are no longer in his favor, and he must turn Vhagar back to King's Landing. We are left with Rhaenyra standing at the shore with her new arsenal of dragons. So that is season 2, episode 7. Dustin, your thoughts and some things that you want to discuss on this episode.
All right. Obviously, the big stuff is the Dragons, Dragon Riders, Red Sewing. So I want to save that. Let's start the little stuff real quick. Knock that out. Then we can spend more of our time on all the Dragons in a minute. You forgot to mention Allison went camping.
Yeah, I went camping. You know, a little vacation, just camping.
You know. She just wanted to go camping. Yeah. So Allison's on a camping trip, you know.
With her one Kingsguard.
Hey, I think that's a good deal for him. Yeah. He gets to go actually camping and doesn't have to worry as much as he would if they're working. Yeah. So Allison's camping, floating in the lake. But another kind of smaller thing that happened was like the Daemon at Harrenhal and the River Lords part.
Yeah, really good scene.
Great scene. I like the whole going outside into their Godswood area. Mm-hmm. That was kind of cool. And
I heard mentioned today that on the Werewood tree, I didn't watch it that closely, but if you look at the Werewood tree that's in the meeting area, mm-hmm. it is George R. R. Martin's face that is carved to the okay. Werewood tree. I thought that was interesting.
That's funny if that is. Oscar Tully, the new head of the Riverlands. Little
scenes from him.
Teenager, like real fresh, and you know, Daemon tried to have a one-on-one with him before to lay down the law and like, here's what we're going to do type deal. But once Oscar got out there with his people that he wants to be in charge of, but they haven't really accepted him yet because he's so young and inexperienced and all this, like he kind of just not necessarily flips on Daemon, but challenges Daemon really hard. And great lines from that kid and from Oscar at Daemon, like even like calls him Prince at one point to insult him. Get under his skin and really get the favor of all these river lords. And like, they, you can see in like less than 5 minutes, they take him and they're like, hell yeah, kid, let's go.
Yeah.
But finally it just comes down to, if you want us, I mean, we don't like you, but we like your queen. And if you want us, you're going to take Blackwater's head off.
Yeah. You're going to kill this.
Blackwater's like, wait, what the hell?
I did what you asked me.
He's like, yeah, you asked me to do this. And he's like, well, there's more of them than of you. So I'm going to take the numbers here and see you. That whole challenging of Daemon from Oscar Tully was a great, great scene.
It was great. It gave me a Lyanna Mormont of Thrones kind of vibes.
I was
young and trying to prove himself. And he just came out there and he knew what he had to do. He couldn't side with Daemon because these guys hate Daemon. And they're not going to listen to him if he's like, oh, Daemon did this. So he knew what he had to do. And what he had to do was just continually dunk all over Daemon. And he continued to do so with just line after line.
Yes.
And by the end of it, all of his people are like, yeah, we're with this kid. And I just thought it was a great scene. I loved I'm excited for more Oscar Tully. I thought what he did was great. He did exactly what Daemon needed him to do. And so at the end, all Daemon can do is like, all right, I've got to kill this guy. Because I need these people, I need this army. But yeah, I really enjoyed that scene. I really enjoyed Oscar Tully, and I hope we get more of him because the kid was balling.
That's right. So yeah, those were the two like minor plot lines that happened that were good. But yeah, let's get to the big parts.
Yeah, the dragons. This was an awesome, just dragon centric episode. Yeah. I thought.
So from the end of last episode to this episode, we got three new dragons with riders on them.
Yep.
Adam and Seasmoke, that's a real quick, awesome opening scene, by the way, on the beach. Yeah. Windy, like huge pano visual. And like the riders in front of the dragons kind of show you how big they are. It's really cool too. Like Rhaenyra's kind of like, what the hell first?
Yeah.
But Adam's like, I don't know what's going on.
He's like, I'm here to serve you.
I'm on your side. Don't hurt me. That's what I got from Adam. He's like, I'm with you. I don't know what the hell is happening. This guy just picked me up in the forest the other day.
He's like, who am I to go against what the gods have chosen for me? You know, like, I thought it was really good. Cool Adam episode too. Like, gets a dragon. his dad. What did you think of when Corliss was just like, well done? Did you take it as of like, I'm actually proud of you and I don't really know how to say it? Or I kind of took it as that, like, hey, I wasn't there for you, but you've made it in the world. That's kind of cool. That's what he interpreted it, the actor himself, of course.
I'm kind of in between on it. I think it's a little bit of both. I think Corliss still won't acknowledge and accept him.
Yeah.
But does give him a little compliment.
Yeah, it's not big, like
a little couple soft pats on the back and then walks out type deal. It's like, yeah, come on, man. Like, Adam's been wanting you to, he's been wanting to do something, been wanting to be somebody, and now he is, so that's really great for him and his character. But yeah, like, Corliss still doesn't own up to him, and like, good on Adam to not burst that bubble of, yeah, Corliss is my dad.
Yeah, he's like my
father. And let Corliss deal with it, and he still hasn't dealt with it. Like, yeah. Come on, man. That's kind of where I'm in the middle there, like a little bit of both.
Yeah, a little bit of both. I mean, he could obviously show him better, but also he's, you know, hadn't really been around these kids his whole life. It's really interesting because Corliss is, you know, him and Rhaenys's relationship was, you know, one of the best relationships that we've kind of seen in this whole Thrones world. But the fact that he has two bastard sons from the same mother, that shows that
they're years apart.
Yeah, I had some connection there. It wasn't just like a off to war one time kind of thing. So I don't know. It is kind of interesting, but I did like the come up for Adam this episode. By the end, he's wearing like Targaryen wardrobe and it looks pretty badass.
Yeah. So now we can get into the other two guys and the whole Red Sewing, which is a great name. And yeah, you put it right. It's Jurassic Park Dragons.
Yeah, it is. They did a great job with that episode, with that specific part of the episode, the terror, the horror.
Yeah, I mean, they got, I don't know, 20, 30, 40 bastards.
I guess I was 43.
Okay.
Or so, something like that.
Gotcha. I couldn't really tell. I knew there's quite a bit that were in that front room when Rhaenyra tried to give them a little pregame pep talk. Yeah. But yeah, it was also funny that Rhaenyra like gets the biggest, scariest dragon she's got. Didn't get the little puppy, playful dragon that Silverwing is first. Yeah. Like, nope, here's going big. And if you die, you die. And then she just leaves and goes up into the press box to watch.
Yeah. As they're like soldiers out there, like, yeah, you can't leave.
Keeping them in. Yeah, that was kind of scary. Also think, like, once you got Vermithor out there, huge, old, great shots of that.
Yeah.
Why'd they get Quasimodo up there first? Like, dude, go.
Well, he was the one who was like, I can do this. He was the first one to kind of,
man.
Everybody else was like, I don't know. And he was like, I'm gonna do it.
So obviously that just pissed Vermithor off. And yeah, you had exactly what I wrote down. He lights the place up as a free buffet.
Yeah.
And just goes to town on these Targaryen bastards, a buffet of Targ bastards. And like, he's throwing people off the cliff. He's lighting everybody up. He's going to town. And it was a great, amazing scene. Like, over and over, just people getting lit up and eaten and thrown around.
And hunted. He's just like hunting them. It's, I thought it was good because, you know, we've only seen like so far the one time a claiming a dragon went wrong that we've seen was last episode when, his name escapes me.
Darklyn
or whatever. He gets roasted. And that was pretty quick. This really shows you the kind of horrors and how hard it is to actually claim a dragon. Cause so far everything else has kind of gone easy. Like when, Aemon claims Vhagar, you know, he just kind of has to hold on and go for a ride. Like, so you can see like how hard it is to actually claim a dragon, the horrors of it. Cause it is scary. These are dinosaur crazy creatures and it shouldn't be easy. And so I enjoyed like the horror of it and the scariness and the hiding and hoping that he won't find you and him just like roasting dudes then eating them. You know, you see the power and then I really did like how Hugh was just like, I'm ready to go. Like, I've kind of lost everything in my life, lost my daughter. Kind of seems like he's lost his wife because his wife didn't want him to do this. He's just like, take me. And Vermithor is like, okay, I respect that.
Yeah, and that's exactly right. Like, he, what I wrote down for him, like, you can see when this opportunity comes up, he wants more of a life. They don't have anything going right now.
No.
Like, they're starving. Their daughter just died. His wife just wants to do nothing, honestly, like, and keep living this peasant lifestyle. And he's like, I got a chance to do something. I'm going to go do it. Whether I come back or not, we're not going to have this life. And then, yeah, like, he steps up, challenges Vermithor. And I think that's kind of how these dragons kind of pick their riders. It's like a personality thing.
Yeah.
Almost like, you got to be not afraid for one, but then also like how you act as a person, how you feel. I think they can feel.
Yeah. Cause I like, think so too.
That's kind of how Vermithor just was like he stepped up, yelled back at him. Wasn't afraid of him. Vermithor's like, all right, well, we can test this out.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought it was cool. What did you think about Hugh talking earlier about his parentage and when he reveals that his mother is
Sarah,
the brother. Yeah. Sarah Targaryen, the sister of, Viserys and Daemon's father.
Yeah. I like that a bunch of these other really in-depth podcasts and book people know of all this. And like Sarah got sent off and or really escaped and went to freelance and really just became a cam stripper off in another land.
Like you said, people will pay more money to fuck a girl with silver hair.
And so yeah, he's like, what, the same age or same family cousins with like Daemon?
Yeah,
and
Daemon's cousin. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So uncle to Rhaenyra, basically. Yeah, I thought that was cool. I thought how people revealed that and helped us get to that, to like show us where it came from to.
It's immediately like when me and Jeanette were watching, we were like, we got to figure out who that mother is. And
like, everybody was like that, I guess. Cause people were diving in. It's Sarah. It's Sarah. It's Sarah.
Yeah. Cause he didn't say the name, but I thought it was good to learn of his parentage. Cause
and some more lineage there.
Yeah. And that's going to come into play in his story, I think, later on. And so,
and on that. So Sarah's his mother, King Jaehaerys. Vermithor was his dragon, and was his last dragon rider. And so, the fact that Jaehaerys banished Sarah for being an idiot all the time and wanting to mess around, and then his grandson, illegitimate grandson, is the one that is the next rider.
Yeah, pretty cool little closing the circle there. When I was listening to a podcast talking about that, there's like only George R. R. Martin can think of stuff like this. Like,
It's
pretty crazy. But yeah, so Hugh claims Vermithor, and then we had the other dragon. I kind of view this as the dragons claimed their riders, not like the riders claimed them. The other one, what'd you think of Silverwing and Ulf?
Yeah, Ulf. Ulf the idiot that I kind of think of him as. He just gets knocked off the cliff by Vermithor and runs away.
Smartly.
He's like, I'm getting the hell out of here. And really just runs deeper into the dragon lair underneath Dragonstone, steps on a clutch of eggs, by the way.
Yeah.
Like, that was kind of cool to see. But accidentally finds Silverwing, who Silverwing's just pumped somebody to be there.
Yeah, I took it as like Silverwing's like, okay, cool. But I also like so Ulf just kind of falls over and he's just kind of laying there like waiting to die.
Yeah.
And so I think Silverwing likes herself a submissive man. I think she likes.
Okay, I like that.
Like I she like wants that, control.
Two kind of small points here. That Silverwing, when he was like going into the little cave, the cove of Silverwing, like the camouflage that and you see it later too,
her just laying there
with Aemon's dragon out in the forest, like the visuals of these camouflage of the dragons is so cool. I also like that,
like it was so cool to just kind of see her kind of outlined on along the cave,
And then once Silverwing doesn't kill off, knocks him down a few times. Like, all right, we can do this. I like that Silverwing takes him on a test run.
Yeah.
Like you just said, it's the dragons picking the riders, and it's the dragons taking the riders on a test run, not the riders taking the dragons on a test run.
Yeah,
it was very that really limited. Is like something if you can, because like Aemon did it with Vhagar. Like if you can stay on and handle it, then we can do this.
Yeah, that's what I was about to say. It was like very reminiscent of when Aegon and Vhagar in season one. It was Aemon just got on him, and Vhagar was like, "All right, can you hold on?" And was able to hold on, and so it felt very, very similar. All right, so the next part of this kind of discussion: do you think it was just an accidental? Ulf was like, they flew over King's Landing. I know there's been discussion on. Do you think it was just taking him for a joyride? Do you think it was planned by Rhaenyra to go kind of buzz King's Landing and draw out Vhagar? What do you kind of think happened there at the end?
No, I think this is all Silverwing test run. Because you can see Ulf doesn't know what he's doing. He's hanging on by a thread. He's scared for his life. Kind of like that Aemon Vhagar scene from last season. Like Silverwing's just testing him out and just decided to go in that direction, make a lap around King's Landing, and then went back to Dragonstone. I mean, they're not that far apart.
The map. Pretty close. Yeah.
So like, not that crazy. I don't think it was planned. Definitely not by Ulf. He doesn't know what he's doing yet.
No.
I don't think Rhaenyra knows that Ulf has Silverwing at all.
Yeah.
Unless they saw him take Silverwing out of there and go that way. Like, but they probably don't know who's on him. So like, I don't think she had anything to do with it, but like once they get back, they kind of know, oh, he's heading towards King's Landing. If they did see it, you know, Aemon and Vhagar might get pissed off and come back to us. So we got to be ready just in case. And that's when we get that epic ending scene with multiple dragons on the end of the Dragonstone Cliffs as he tells Vhagar to turn around and flee.
Yeah, first time you kind of see Aemon realize, oh shit.
That one eye worked real well.
Yeah. He's been pretty confident throughout, but this time he realizes, oh, the numbers aren't in my favor. I got to get back. And then, you see Vermithor.
The Vermithor changes the game.
Yeah. Vermithor is a game changer, adding Sea Smoke and Silverwing. You also have Rhaenyra's dragon and Jace's dragon, Bela's dragon. So, they've really flipped the dragon math. But another little small tidbit is we do get news on Team Green side that Darren, the Aegon and Aemon's brother, his dragon has now taken to wing, and that Darren and Tessarion, his dragon, are about to enter the war, enter the fight. Now that won't be a season two thing, I don't think. That might be.
You also have Rhaena trying to chase down Sheep Stealer too. So
yes. Yeah, so more and more dragons being added to the cause. Well, that leads us. Any other bits from this episode that you think were worth discussing?
No, not really.
All right, let's move on to our winners and losers from the episode. Dustin, your winners from episode 7, The Red Sewing.
Obviously, like the new writers, Ulf and Hugh Hammer, but the other winner I have is Vermithor. He got a nice buffet dinner. This one, I bet he was pretty excited rather to not get, a couple of sheeps or goats.
Yeah.
He got a nice buffet of about 30 Targaryen bastards. So I bet he was pumped for that.
Yeah. He really enjoyed himself there. Let himself go. When you get a whole bag of chips and you just eat the whole
bag.
Yeah,
he ate them all.
That's what he was like. Good one. I had Ulf and Hugh, obviously, as they are now dragon riders. I've got Oscar Tully here as Oscar. A winner from this episode. We already talked about him in a lot of detail earlier, but really good scene. Shows that he can be a capable leader, brings the Riverlords to trust him, and then adds all that army to Team Black. So I thought it was a really awesome Oscar Tully episode. And so, I have to have him as a winner. I also have Rhaenyra as a winner just because her plan, despite the horrors of it, actually worked, and she got two new dragon riders from it. So she got someone to ride Vermithor and Silverwing. So it might have been horrific, but it worked out. Any other winners? Or
other than the only ones I got?
Losers, Dustin, who you have?
Obviously, Targaryen bastards that showed up to the game.
I said not being all for Hugh.
Not being all for Hugh and getting roasted like a s'mores marshmallow in that thing. Yep. My other one were the Dragon Keepers on strike.
Yeah.
I think there's some losers in this because they stood up, grabbed their pickets, and walked out and quit working because they thought this was a dumb idea and you can't do this. And it ended up working. So it's kind of like, get back to work. So I got the Dragon Keepers trying to go on strike. That strike didn't last very long, I don't think.
Yeah. Yeah, strike. We'll see how that turns out. I've got Sir Willem Blackwood as a loser. Obviously, he lost his head, but kind of tough look for him. Only did what Daemon asked, but the one mistake he made was
a little too much of what Daemon.
A little too much of what Daemon asked at the end. And like Oscar Tully, he hit him with some bars. He's like, "You wanted to do it, you didn't just do it. You wanted to do it." And I've got Aemond kind of as a loser in this episode because, it's the first time you really see him on Vhagar, which is this all-powerful weapon, being scared and being like, this is too much. And so having to turn back on his dragon because he realizes I'm about to get got if I pursue this any longer. So I kind of have him as a small loser in this one. But like we said, not much from the Team Green side. I'm going to guess... Go ahead and guess who you got winning this episode. I think Team Black resounding victory.
Easy Team Black victory. I mean, the episode was based around them, which I kind of liked that we didn't bounce as much in this one. There was a lot to cover, honestly. But, Daemon's getting his shit together in Harrenhal. Got the Riverlands and the Riverlords. And then, obviously, the two dragons and the dragon seating worked. Yeah. Three dragons, I guess you could say, from last episode. Yeah. So. Huge numbers advantage, huge dragon advantage for the Blacks and Rhaenyra.
Yeah, I think this is our biggest landslide episode victory. This is like Team USA versus Serbia, the other day, like just a dominant performance. Like Team USA versus South Sudan right now is 43-26. So a blowout from start to finish. You gain three dragons, you gain the River Lords. Really, all Team Green, didn't really do anything. Of consequence this episode. They get news that Tessarion and Darren are ready to fight, but that's a future thing. So things definitely shifting towards Team Black here as we reach the episode finale, which, Dustin, did you see that the episode leaked?
I have heard. I didn't see. So luckily.
I didn't see. Jeanette apparently was watching some videos last night.
What the hell?
Yeah, that's what I said. What the
hell? I don't want to see it either. Like, this is one of the few TV shows that we still have that's weekly.
Yeah.
There's anticipation for sporting events is kind of all we have left of that now with binge TV. And this is a good thing to look forward to every Sunday, and especially the end of the season, the finale with all these dragons.
Yeah, I was like, I don't want to watch that. I don't want to watch it. I like turning on my big TV and having the
hearing the da-dum.
And then the Thrones music and all of that stuff. So I didn't watch it. Only it was a few scenes apparently got leaked on TikTok. But if you're trying to avoid spoilers, then maybe stay away from TikTok. I didn't see any on Twitter. I just saw that some.
I haven't even seen any come across my timelines. Yeah. Thank goodness. Yeah, but now that we talked about it, they probably will.
Hopefully we avoid those spoilers till Sunday when the season finale comes back. And of course we'll be back next week, to discuss that. And of course, we'll start getting into some more Texas Tech football news, but, that will do it for us this week here at the Tailgate. We want to thank you guys, for listening. And as always, make sure you are following us, follow us on Apple, follow us on Spotify. Give us those 5-star ratings, 5 stars for the Tailgate, please. If you listen to us on Apple, leave us a review. Follow us on social media on Twitter at Tailgate_Talks. We're also on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. Once again, appreciate you guys hanging out with us this week, talking a little bit of Texas Tech and some House of the Dragon. And as always, we'll catch y'all at the next Tailgate.